Hello, my name is Randy Hillier. For 15 years, I was an elected representative in the Ontario Legislature. Join me at Scuttlebutt Lodge, my camp here in Lanark County, as I'm joined by great Canadians who are making a positive contribution to advocate for and defend faith, freedom, and democracy. Come on in. Today, I'm going to share a few stories about how the leadership races in our major political parties are rigged. Just as I explained in the last couple episodes about the theater and the illusion of party politics in this country, and indeed throughout the Western world, with the rigging of the local nomination races and the theater of our parliamentary committees, the same happens at the leadership races as well. But these are bigger stakes. Much more money is at play with a leadership race than just a local nomination or a committee hearing. So the stakes are higher, the sophistication of the illusion and the sophistication of the tactics that they use to rig the race are far, far more disguised and camouflaged. But let's start with a recent development. We saw this past week, Kerry Lake, the former candidate for the Arizona state governor race, announced at the CPAC convention that she too had been attempted to be bribed and prevent from further elected office in the United States. That's much the same as the story I shared with a little while ago about how the Progressive Conservative Party attempted to bribe me and prevent me from running. But let's go back to the leadership race, because these are really a lot of excitement with them. Memberships swell. The press is engaged. The pundits are engaged. Everybody's got their eye on the leadership races. But the bribery and the rigging happens there, and often in plain sight, if you care to look. And I think one of the things that you need to understand about our major political parties and why the leadership is so important is, if you think of a political party as a mafia, organized crime family, that gives you a little bit more understanding of just the importance of it. Who is going to be the Don? Who is going to be the godfather? Or at least, which face will be seen as the godfather? And that's probably a better way of saying it. Because all the interests within the party are better viewed as who the crime families are, who the made men are in party politics. And of course, they're all jockeying that they get their favored godfather in place so that they can enrich themselves and make off like the bandits that they are through their various lobbyist organizations, GR firms, polling firms, campaign firms. There's quite a multitude of unseen players here. But anyway, there's a lot of interest and a lot of excitement. And for many regular folks, party members, they view this as their opportunity to pick their new David to go against the other team's Goliath. And they always delude themselves into believing that this next leader will be unlike the one before and unlike all the ones before. This new leader that they get to choose will be unlike all others and will be honest and forthright and win their cause. But they always are disappointed, sooner often rather than later. I'll take you back to, well, let's just go back to the last federal conservative race, where a number of outsiders were attempting to seek the leadership. People like Joseph Borgo out in Saskatchewan. And there was three or four others who were all disqualified without the party having to explain why they were disqualified. But the party was not going to allow them to enter the race because they didn't have control over these outsiders. And this, again, goes back to previous episode where I talked about the open primaries in the United States compared to the closed nomination process here. But let me share a story. The first time I saw this was shortly after the 2007 election. John Tory in Ontario had lost and had been humiliated, losing his own seat here in the general election in Ontario. And the party constitution calls for a mandated review of that leadership. So many riding associations across the province had mobilized and selected delegates to attend this leadership review. And there was quite a substantial number of people who wanted a new leader after the fiasco of the 2007 election. So the convention was going to be held in London. Many ridings organized their delegates to go down to oppose John Tory. Myself and many others in Eastern Ontario, we rented a number of coaches to bring the delegates down to London. And on our way down to London, we get a call from the party president, Blair McCready, saying, all your delegates have been disqualified. We have found reasons why they will not be permitted to vote in this leadership race. Even though the party had taken their money, had registered them as delegates, these people had gone to great cost as well for hotels, etc., and they were still permitted to come to the convention, but they were no longer going to be allowed to vote. Now, we got into quite a argument, and we were successful in getting most of those delegates back on the voters list. And that was on the Friday afternoon before the convention was starting. We arrived in London, and the next morning, the Saturday morning, the voting was to start. And lo and behold, if six new coaches of people arrived at the London Convention Center on the Saturday morning, nobody knew who these people were, but over 300 people arrived to register for the vote where everybody else had registered on Friday night. And the vote took place. The credentials desk was under the full control of John Tory and the party operatives. And John had made significant inroads and had significant support from the OPCYA, who provide a lot of the staff at the credentials desk and others during the convention. And the votes were going to be announced at the evening dinner. So we all start going into the grand convention room, the big ballroom, where the 1,000 delegates who had pre-registered were to have a sit-down meal and to hear the results of the vote and a keynote address by John Tory. Well, as we're getting into the grand ballroom, we're told that the hotel does not have enough seating space for the delegates. Even though these 1,000 delegates were registered 6 weeks earlier and the arrangements had all been made, somehow there was about 400 people who couldn't find a seat at that dinner. We were all shuffled off, myself included, down into a bunch of basement rooms and served up a box lunch. And that, my friends, is just one of the ways. In that leadership review, about 400 instant voters were created to support John Tory, and he squeaked by with a 66% majority on that leadership review vote. Now, of course, John would go on to lose another by-election and ultimately be ousted from the party, but he held on tenaciously and used all the tools and mechanisms of deception and deceit, or his team did, to ensure that he could remain the godfather of the Ontario PC Party. We saw this again just in the last provincial leadership race where Doug Ford was crowned over Christine Elliott. And if you recall in that race, it took about 12 hours after the votes were counted and tabulated to release who was the winner. And what we knew, and what we know now, was that Christine Elliott was not conceding the race to Doug Ford because caste. But apparently, they could not attribute which ridings those votes were cast in, and therefore they disqualified those 12,000 votes. And they also stated they wouldn't have made a difference anyway. Doug Ford had won, and Christine Elliott came in second place. But like every other good mafia family, Christine Elliott stayed in the party. She was going to have her turf cut out for her, and she did. She became Minister of Health, and Doug Ford became the godfather of the Ontario Progressive Conservative Party. This is all orchestrated behind the scenes. Dubious and devious means are used by the organized crime racket called political parties to ensure the preferred godfather is sitting at the head of the table. And, you know, this different parties use different tactics, but the end result is always the same. People believe that they're having an influence in their political party. All they are being is, as P.T. Barnum once said, there's a sucker born every minute. And most everyone who has a membership in these parties is viewed by the party in the same view that P.T. Barnum did. A sucker born every minute. And, you know, just to give you another example of this is the Federal Liberal Party. Isn't it unique and such a coincidence that every Federal Liberal leader alternates from French to English, back to French, back to English? And this is the record in the history. You know, go back to Sir Wilfrid Laurier, the first Francophone Liberal Prime Minister and leader. Well, he was followed by an Anglophone, William Lyon Mackenzie, who was then followed by a Francophone, Louis Saint-Laurent. And you just keep going. After Louis Saint-Laurent, Lester B. Pearson. After Pearson, Pierre Trudeau. And it continued. And is it reasonable to believe that all the Liberals know how many votes that they should cast to make sure that they alternate English and French leaders? No. This is a contrived process. But everybody believes it. You hear the media saying, well, the Liberals have a history and a culture of alternating leaders. Well, they do have a history and they do have a culture, but it's a rigged history and a rigged culture. And the political parties are best seen as a protection racket. And that's why the results are rigged, to make sure that that protection racket, that organized crime culture, continues and will continue. And as we see, that's very lucrative for the party to do it this way. It's very lucrative for the members to participate because they're the ones who get the benefit, not the public. I hope you enjoyed today's video. Make sure to like, share, and follow. And if you'd like to spend some time at Scuttlebutt Lodge, click on the link below. I look forward to seeing you here at the lodge.